Welcome, 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 friends and neighbors, back to the show. We'd like to begin today's episode with a snippet of a Stone Cold jam from the 90s.
Total Stone Cold classic.
And you're right, many of you may recall that iconic hit by TLC, Waterfalls, as in Don't Go Chasing Them. Hi, I'm Ben.
I'm Nolan. Ben, did I ever tell you that my first ever live concert was TLC?
You did mention that. Yeah. Not on air, though.
It was TLC opening for MC Hammer, and also Boyz II Men was on the bill, ABC, BBD. And it was the era of TLC where they wore really big baggy clothes and had, like, condoms taped all over them and stuff.
Sure. And prophylactics is, yes, like, sex education.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It was definitely pre-Waterfalls era and Creep and all of that stuff. But I felt like I was a little ahead of the curve on that one because they were sort of unknown. They were the opener, and then Boyz II Men, and then MC Hammer, which was right around the time the Addams Family soundtrack was out with the Hammer song, remember? They do what they want to do, say what they want to. Remember that one? Yeah, they didn't actually perform that. I was kind of bummed. No, that's not true. He did perform it, but I kind of thought there would be a little more Addams Family-esque pageantry involved, being that the movie was, you know, fresh in theaters, but no.
My very first concert that I can recall, so not some kind of Opryland thing that I had to perform in or something. The very first concert I went to as a patron was when my parents took me to see the Four Tops. And this was in the 80s. Cool. So this was not their, you know, heyday per se.
I'm sorry, Ben. I think you buried the lead there. Opryland performances?
Yeah. Yep.
Go on.
Well, my first foray into acting was a recurring role at an amusement park called Opryland. I was from like 6 to 7 or 8 years old. I learned that it was a paying gig on my 18th birthday.
Were they stowing it away for you?
I had no idea. Yeah.
No. Oh, man. They were. Yeah. They gave it to you. They gave you your earnings. Sort of. They took a cut. They probably took a finder's fee.
But it was the 80s, Noel. It was a different time. And some pretty good things happened in the 80s.
Were you a song and dance man? I mean, what was your, I'm sorry, I don't mean to harp on this.
Oh, I was the hero who comes to town to clean up the craziness and stop the gunfights.
Nice.
They had a thing where they would randomly, I'm doing air quotes here, folks. Yeah. They would randomly pick a kid out of the crowd
to make you fight.
To pull up and say, oh, you're going to be the star of the show. And the adults loved it.
Cool.
So I was just there every summer as their plant in the crowd. And then they would give me this cartoonishly big hat.
I'm smiling so big right now. This thrills me to no end.
That's very kind of you to say. My my parents did make a framed picture of it with some of the cash that they kept for decades.
Is it one of those old-timey sepia tone type pictures where you got your six guns on? No. Okay. No. I have one of those with my family. But the 80s, right?
The 80s, yeah. Thriller. I feel like now we could just say Thriller.
Mm-hmm.
That was massive.
It was a big hit. Big hit.
Back to the Future.
Yeah. Big hit.
Big hits. And we also have in an article from Lori L. Dove a shout out to Trapper Keepers. Did you ever have a Trapper Keeper?
Yeah. I had that. I mean, what made it special? Just the brand, and it had, like, you know, kitties and stuff on it. Like, there would be a Lisa Frank Trapper Keeper. There could be all kinds of different ones.
Oh, it was the Velcro.
Oh, there was a
flap
Velcro
too, right? I believe they have Velcro.
Yeah, it was just like a binder, but it was just sort of a fancy binder, and everyone had you had to have one.
Oh, and speaking of things we have to have, how do we get so far without giving a shout out to our super producer Casey Pegram?
For shame. On us.
I think we just got so distracted by nostalgia today.
I got caught up in Opryland and picturing little Ben breaking up gunfights at the OK Corral.
To this day, Noel, I remember all of my lines. Every single one.
Well, maybe we'll have to have a reading later in the episode.
I can do them right now.
Do it.
Because they're all, yep.
Oh, okay.
it was like a 20-minute show.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, shout out to Opryland. Big, big fan. Shout out to the 80s.
Yeah, did you have a Cabbage Patch Kid?
I have been to that farm.
Babyland General?
In Georgia, yeah.
It's very weird.
It is extremely weird.
Very strange place. There's a tree in the middle of the main building, and there are just little baby Cabbage Patch heads sprouting up out of the ground all around this tree.
With these little leaves
them. And some of them kind of move. But what do they do with the tree, Ben? Have you been to the ceremony?
I did not stick around for the ceremony because it's in this old building. It's a is it a hospital?
I think it's an old hospital. So they call it Babyland General. Mm-hmm. Like it's meant, I think, or at least it's meant to feel like one. Well,
I'm not
sure
if it was. It's creepy because they announce like births and stuff too over the intercom.
Well, they birth the babies out of the hole in the tree.
Well, for some people, that might be really fascinating.
And then there's a nurse that takes the baby out, extracts it from the tree, holds it upside down, and slaps it on the butt. I had my kid's birthday party there one year.
Oh, yeah. I was at a bluegrass festival. That's how I found it.
That's an odd locale for
bluegrass and chili. It was great.
Yeah, yeah. You know what else was great?
What else was great?
The 80s.
Hey, there we go. We promise we're going to get to the episode eventually. The thing is, we can look back at the past with such rose-colored glasses, with such nostalgia, and sometimes we can forget the other things that happened in the 80s that were not as awesome as Back to the Future, Trapper Keepers, or Thriller, right? There's a balance. We, as a species, had some, let's say, we've had some hilarious missteps, and we've had some tragic missteps. You know, there were there was a drug crisis, which continues today. A lot of the clothes looked really weird, although they're coming back in style.
Hypercolor. Was that a thing? That was more of a 90s thing.
Was it?
Hypercolor?
I don't know, man. I was such a nerd as a kid, surprisingly, that I didn't really have a grasp on the zeitgeist.
Yeah. Did you ever have a hypercolor shirt, though? The ones where you kind of touched it and your imprint of your hand would be on it?
Like, oh, I remember. Yeah, I didn't. No, the texture really spooked me.
That's right. You have very specific feelings about textures.
That's true. That's true. But everybody does. What are some of the things you remember from the 80s, Noel, or things that when you look back, you think, whoa, that was crazy?
Well, it's weird. Like, when I was younger, I used to think that the 80s were inherently bad and that all 80s music was crappy because I just didn't know better. And I assumed that the 80s were lame because of the, you know, big pop hits and like Bananarama and the stuff that I would see. But I didn't have parents that, like, were into cool music, so I kind of had to find my own way. My parents were both professional classical musicians, so I really did have to figure that out for myself. But now I look back on the 80s with utter rose-colored glasses and joyous nostalgia. I remember the cartoons, Thundercats, all the Deke cartoons, Inspector Gadget. And remember Deke? Deke.
Yes, I remember that clip, but I couldn't tell you a thing about the plot. I also, Thundercats, wasn't there a Starhawk or something as
Silverhawks.
Well? Silverhawks. Yeah. There we go.
Well, Deke was the production company, and they made most of their cartoons based on pre-existing toys and properties and stuff. Boy, we are just going on. Today's episode's not about any of this stuff.
No, we are mentioning the 80s because one very strange and incredibly significant bad thing happened in the 80s. Many did, but one is the subject of our episode. In the 1980s, while many of the people listening to the show were actually alive, humanity took one of the largest waterfalls on the planet and erased it.
Humanity, what the hell?
just erased the whole thing. And to tell this story, we have to journey to South America.
Specifically, along the border of Paraguay and Brazil, where once stood an incredibly stunning, spectacular series, cascade of waterfalls called the Guaira Falls.
Yes, the Guaira Falls, which produced in their day the greatest volume of falling water in the world. This is something we found out in some of our earlier research. The definition of largest waterfall can be pretty tricky, and it's got a couple caveats. So this is largest in terms of the amount of water that fell. But there are other ones that might have a higher elevation or a longer drop.
Sure, like Niagara Falls, but this one had twice the flow of Niagara Falls. That sounds like a pretty cool compliment. Mm-hmm. You got twice the flow of this other waterfall.
It sounds like a strong selling point. Yes, there were a total, Noel, you mentioned it was a series of waterfalls. There were a total of 18 and all, and seven of these were the most powerful waterfalls, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And that's where it got the nickname Seven Falls.
Right. So the series of falls is located just 20 kilometers from another quite famous, more famous, arguably, waterfall called the Iguaza Falls. Mm-hmm. And that is, again, along the border of Brazil and Paraguay. And you could consider this, could have considered this a natural wonder of the world. And many considered it to rival the Iguazu Falls. Mm-hmm. And it was, again, a series of 18 massive waterfalls, and it's on the Piranha River, right at the point where there's like a gorge, and the river gets kind of squeezed through the mm-hmm. gorge.
Yeah, and the total height of these falls was 375 feet, with the largest individual fall or cataract being 130 feet. You could hear the sound of the water for miles and miles and miles away.
That's right, around 30 kilometers away. And the reason that flow was so strong is because that gorge we were talking about, it actually narrowed abruptly from 380 meters to 60 meters, which created that intense flow that we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm. And you can check out a map of the site from a book called A New Gateway to the Heart of South America, written in 1871. Wait, guys, you might be saying, that sounds pretty outdated. Yes, but it's a more accurate depiction of the waterfall than you would find nowadays because, again, Guara Falls no longer exist.
Yeah, it's what they would call an X waterfall.
Yes. And there's one other thing that sounds almost too sappy to be true, but is magnificent, and it's a true story, and it has to do with the mist of the waterfall, right?
It's true. Apparently, you could go to these falls anytime during the day, and there would just be this, like, perma rainbow there. Mm-hmm. It just sounds like a magical land.
A perpetual rainbow.
Yeah.
Call
yeah.
the Care Bears.
So what do as humanity? We see this amazing, gorgeous wonder of nature, and we decide, let's blow it up.
Right, yes.
Build some kind of power plant.
Yeah, so what happened? What made us take this particular paradise and put up a parking lot for water? There we go. We got there.
No, you got there, my friend.
It's a dam.
I'm here to support you.
It's a dam, and you're right about the electricity. The government of the area decides to build a dam, a huge dam, a 4.8-mile-long dam called the Itiapu Dam.
Yeah, it's true. And before doing that, again, they had to blast out with dynamite those rock faces that the falls fell down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So no more waterfall. And what happened was the falls were submerged when the 4.8-mile Itiapu Dam was built downriver. And this is the seventh largest river in the world, just to make that clear. Mm-hmm. And it started to be diverted in 1978, actually caused about 10,000 families to lose their homes and have to relocate.
Yes.
What is that, like eminent domain? How do they make people do that?
Well, eminent domain is the practice that we in the United States would be most familiar with in terms of like roads widening mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But laws like that do exist in other countries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very tough to be an individual family or household against, for lack of a better term, big government.
Big electric.
Yeah. Big electric.
Because it is government, right? This is a government infrastructure, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously they would have had to pay them something. I can't imagine they'd just, you know, say, get out.
Yeah, and there's probably a lot of paperwork involved because it is a joint undertaking by Brazil and Paraguay. And I believe Argentina originally raised a ruckus about it, but ultimately the dam got built. On October 13th, 1982, they finally closed the dam. And this allowed the river to flood the falls, the seventh largest river in the world, again, as you point out, Noel, to finally flood the falls.
So the waters began to rise, and this did not happen overnight. In fact, thousands of tourists came to the area to get one last look at the falls. And Ben, I have to correct myself here. I mentioned earlier that they dynamited those rock faces. Mm-hmm. That did not happen until later, after the whole thing was underwater, because they wanted to promote safer navigation of the river.
Oh, okay.
So that was the deal there. Anyway, though, so these people are walking over this precariously maintained footbridge, and it collapsed, and 80 people lost their lives.
Holy smokes. Yes, this is true. They soldiered on with the project, though, and you could, you know, as you can imagine, at this point, they've spent millions of dollars. They've already sunk so much time and effort into this dam, and they say, you know what, we're going to stick it out. The first electricity is generated by the dam in 1984, before it was even fully completed, which was 1991.
Yeah, I don't know. Are we being too hippy-dippy about this, Ben? I mean, it did create an awful lot of power.
Yes.
Maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. Is it a worthwhile sacrifice?
You know, it really depends on what perspective somebody wants to take. I'm sure there are people who are receiving the electricity who think this was more than worthwhile, but there are also a lot of people, I imagine, who feel like the damage to the ecosystem isn't justified. But there's no arguing that this provides a massive amount of energy both to Paraguay and Brazil.
Yeah, it's in the neighborhood of 100 terawatt hours of power each year, which is 75% of Paraguay's electricity and 17% of Brazil's. So, you know, it's a big deal.
Yeah, by comparison, that's enough to power just this one dam. Creates enough power to supply the state of California.
How much power does a rainbow generate?
It generates the power of love, bro. You can't measure that.
I know. Well, that's the thing.
I came off a little testy.
No, I like it. I like it. No, I'm passionate about it too. And unfortunately, yeah, no, not none power other than the power of love doesn't turn on lights, my man.
That's true. And, you know, it's a very difficult argument to make if you have to tell people who don't have electricity that you're able to provide it, but you're not going to.
Yeah.
You know, that's a real dilemma. But we do have good news. As we said, it's providing this enormous amount of electricity, and it's still a tourist destination.
Yeah, in 2014, more than 856,000 people visited the dam, some possibly paying homage.
Help us out here.
It is homage if you're staying with the French pronunciation.
And that has been Casey on the Case.
Love it.
It's so great.
So helpful. But yeah, I mean, it's sort of, probably a bittersweet thing. Although people do go to like the Hoover Dam and stuff. Maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. So
there's probably like the dull tourists that just want to go see a cool dam. And then there are the ones that are pining for the old way.
And because the rock face has been destroyed underneath the water, these waterfalls are not coming back.
They're donezo. It's actually a really funny statement. I think it's funny. From the director of the company that built the dam, he issued this saying, "We're not destroying Seven Falls. We're just going to transfer it to Itaipu Dam, whose spillway will be the substitute for the fall's beauty."
And you can see the spillway that they're talking about here.
It's
like a venting system,
right?
You know, and it goes off at an angle down this concrete slope.
Right. No perma rainbow, though.
No beautiful scenery. And this inspired a lot of art and a lot of, again, nostalgia, yearning. We cannot verify that Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls is about this event. But, you know.
We should probably talk a little more about that song, though, so we get the fair use privileges.
That's true. It is an excellent video. It is warning about living life too fast, making impulsive decisions.
Yes. A life of vice.
And we could relate that even to this event by asking, on balance, hundreds of years from now, what will have been the correct choice?
You know, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone?
Yep, it's true.
Yeah.
And
this is a reference-y episode today.
This is, but I think we're actually nailing it. I think we're doing an okay job.
A little more background on Waterfalls, produced by the Atlanta hip-hop collective Organized Noise.
True.
Who worked with the Goody Mob and the Dungeon Family crew and all that. And they actually recently did an event sponsored by Lululemon.
We return to the old dilemma of progress versus preservation, really, because although this has been on balance a very good thing for many residents of Paraguay and Brazil, it is by no means the only time events like this occur. In fact, 28,000 rivers, waterways have disappeared in China in recent history. You can read about it in an article by Angel Su and William Mao on The Atlantic called 28,000 Rivers Disappeared in China, What Happened? And without going too far into this, a lot of it goes back to environmental damage, soil loss, erosion, climate change. But then China also built an enormous dam, the Three Gorges Dam.
Ben, your encyclopedic knowledge of the dams of the world never ceases to amaze me.
And you know what? One day it'll be remotely useful.
I mean, you've talked about two dams so far, and to me, that is encyclopedic.
Wait, we got to three because we said Hoover Dam as well.
Oh, that's right. We did mention Hoover Dam. Remember that in the Beavis and Butthead Do America when they go and visit the Hoover Dam?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good part. That's all I got.
We should totally go take an extra credit segment, and the three of us go head out to see the Hoover Dam. Mm-hmm. Well, we've been to Vegas for various work-related projects before, but—
I have never been to Vegas.
You've never been?
Never been to Vegas.
I thought you were there.
No, man.
Who was that?
This is my doppel.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, maybe we should just fly into Vegas, do a night. A lot of my friends call Vegas a three-day city.
Can we do kind of a fear and loathing kind of situation?
We should.
You bring the ether, my friend.
We should definitely have a lawyer. Casey, are you a lawyer by any chance, in addition to your many other talents?
As your attorney, I advise you to get into town very quickly. I don't know what that exact line, but yeah.
Okay, so we have some kinks to work out, but this sounds like a promising expedition. We would also, of course, love to hear your take on this dilemma. And if you have ever been to the site of the falls, or if you have visited this dam on the border of Paraguay and Brazil, we'd love to hear from you. What was it like?
Yeah, I want to know. Inquiring minds want to know. We can relay it to the inquiring minds after we have satiated our inquiring minds. You can write to us at ridiculous@howstuffworks.com. You can hit us up on social medias, the Facebook, the Instagram, where we are Ridiculous History. Hey, why not join our Facebook group called The Ridiculous Historians, having some good convos on there with some fun folk. And you know what? We haven't mentioned this in a while. Do us a solid. Write us a nice review on iTunes or whatever podcatcher app you use.
Yeah, please do.
Because, man, you know, the way this is, I got a bone to pick.
Go for it.
With iTunes, yeah, Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, yeah, what's up?
They have the old reviews first, forever and all time. So if we have a podcast, for example, that's been going on for 20 years, the reviews for day one are the first ones you see.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, man. Come on. No one's firing on all cylinders on day one.
Yeah, and a lot of our older shows were originally 5 minutes long maximum.
Oh, you mean the old How Stuff Works shows?
Yeah.
Exactly. So I don't know. Apple, help us out. let's have a little sort by date tab or something like that.
And in return, we have a gift for you, because you may be saying, the guys are wrapping up this episode. Now I have to wait for another episode to come out, but I want to learn more. I want to learn more strange, ridiculous stuff throughout history. We have a podcast recommendation for you.
We really do. Our compatriots, April Callahan and Cassidy Zachary, who are fashion historians, they have written literal books on the subject of the history of fashion, have a really cool podcast called Dressed, where they talk about all things fashion history. Very, very, very cool deep dive stuff. And as it turns out, super producer Casey Pegram, he produces that show too. What?
Casey? You've got to leave something for the normal people.
I know, man. You can't do it all, but he will sure try his best. And we have a specific ep to recommend.
That is right. If you would like to tune in to Dressed and explore the who, what, when, and why of what we wear, we think you will love their episode that came out this April about smuggling bustles. During the 19th century, you see, Americans would smuggle French goods into the country to avoid paying ridiculously expensive duties, but...
You said duties.
I did.
Just hanging out.
No, don't cut it.
All right, we're keeping it.
Okay. But it is true that one of the most commonly smuggled items might surprise you, because it wasn't, you know, gold or onions or whatever.
What's a bustle? Is that like a bustier or a brassiere?
It's the thing that goes on the back of the dress.
Oh, that's right. Yep, I got it. The ruffle. Yeah.
As you can tell, neither of us are fashion historians by trade.
We're barely like, we barely can dress ourselves
right.
in the morning. Well, I don't know. I'll speak for myself. I've been upping my game a little bit, though, thanks to hanging out with April and Cassidy, who I'm actually going to visit. They're based in New York City, and I'm going to go hang out with them tomorrow.
So let me pick up this thread, though, because one of the commonly smuggled items, it wasn't gold or onions. They were French fashion items.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like bustles. They were packed in trunks. They were smuggled under clothing. You can learn all about it by tuning in to Dressed, available wherever you listen to this podcast.
And leave them a nice review, too. They're a new podcast, and they're really doing cool things. We're big fans.
Tell them we sent you, too. In the meantime, we hope that you enjoyed this episode. We would like to give a big thanks, of course, to Casey, of course, to Lori L. Dove, who wrote a fantastic article on this event, this tragedy, or this great step in progress on HowStuffWorks.com.
It's true. And we'd like to thank Alex Williams, who composed our theme. And we hope you'll tune in next time when we take a dive into banned scientific texts. It's going to be a laugh riot.
It's going to be a big old time.
Big old time.
So that's all for today, folks. Most importantly, thank you so much for listening. We hope to hear from you very soon. Wish us luck as we go on our fear and loathing inspired expedition.
Now that's going to be a big time.